हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ओम शांति शांति शांति। ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so now we have that Sahadeva has glorified Krishna and everything. Then all the he assembled the it says here, Sahadeva continued to glorify Krishna for several more minutes. When he stopped speaking, the rishis, celestials, and assembled kings resoundedly approved. Seeing his decision confirmed by the Brahmins and gods, Yudhishthira began to worship Krishna. Right, so Sahadeva made his point. Why? Everybody, you know, that we could see he is here, the celestials, rishis, assembled kings, resoundingly approved. That means like everybody, you know, like this. And so then he's confident that everybody's comfortable with this. Tears ran down from his eyes, and showers of flowers fell from the sky as he offered Krishna the Argya and the Soma Rasa. So that means the demigods are showering flowers. Everyone cheered and stood in respect as Krishna was worshipped. Right? So you have basically the whole universe, you know, being inspired here. But a few monarchs had not agreed. A few, right? Shishupal in particular was outraged, and he remained seated while the offering was made to Krishna. He was seething. Krishna was a sworn enemy. Shishupal had once been about to marry the beautiful Rukmini, but Krishna had kidnapped her on her wedding day and married her himself. From that day forward, his enmity for Krishna had only increased. You know, he's not like Krishna since he was a baby, like that. But all that he's saying, it's just increased. So it's not that it started. No, it's been there. He's just born didn't like Krishna. This offering of honor was too much to tolerate. He suddenly leapt to his feet and began to shout angrily, "Surely destiny is supreme. Otherwise, how could this injustice have occurred?" Right? So they don't even wait till it's over. He didn't like it. Everybody else agrees. He thinks it's wrong. Now that he wants to voice it, but it's already started. Right? Means you have something. Say it before it starts. Then they work it out. But it's already started. It's already going on. It's approved by, let's say, you know, by the looks of it, you know, 99% of everybody who's there, and they are representing the universe. But then the problem comes is no, because they feel bad. No, it can't go on. You know, they have to say something. Well, why didn't you say before? Or why don't you wait till after and then say something? But, you know. How could those present have been influenced by the words of a foolish boy, meaning Sahadev, because he's the youngest of the brothers? I cannot agree with Sahadev's statements. There are many personalities here, much more worthy of the worship than Krishna. The great rishis, the gods, and all the earth's kings are present. Krishna is not even a king. So he's saying, even the kings, it's not like he's saying the demigods are here and the great rishis and all this. He's saying that they're here, and the gods, the kings of the earth. You know, because his point is, he's not even a king, right? He is nothing but the son of a cowherd man, right? So the acharyas then point out is that he's not even king. No, he's beyond a king. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. It's the origin of everything. So he's not a king. And he identifies as the son of a coward man. Not means that's the social position. He's not the social position of the king. But by relationship, by affection, by prema, then he's the son of Nanda Maharaj. You know, sort of like that. We cannot even ascertain his caste or social position because he's transcendental, you know. He's saying it as an insult. But actually, they're indirect glorifications, right? Because he is Jai. He seems to care nothing for Vedic injunctions and principles because he's beyond them. They come from him. How then can he be worshipped in this assembly? Shishupal frowned. His coppery eyes challenged those in the assembly. Krishna is neither the eldest, the wisest, nor the most powerful person present. Right? He doesn't understand he is. But, you know, that's him. Because he sees the pastime. He takes that he's an ordinary person. While everybody else in the assembly understands he's the original person. There are many other persons present more qualified than Krishna in every way. Yudhishthira could have worshipped any one of them before selecting Krishna. Placing his hand on the long sword hanging from his belt, the Chedi king furiously concluded, "We have paid tribute to Yudhishthira, thinking him to be virtuous." That was clearly a mistake, right? Because that means we paid, he'll do the right thing, he'll worship, everything will go auspiciously. And now his idea is that we paid the tribute, but now he's making a wrong choice. So how is he Dharmaraj, right? He has insulted us today by worshiping Krishna, who most unrighteously had Jarasandha killed. Now we see what sort of men are Yudhishthira and his brothers, as well as Bhishma, who's approved of this madness. Right now he's insulting everybody. There's a Bengali saying that before a jackal dies, it runs into the village. Right? So it just does all the things that will get you killed. Shishupal turned to address Krishna. "As for you, Krishna, why have you allowed yourself to be worshipped like this? You're exactly like a dog that has stolen the offerings of ghee meant for a sacrifice and is licking them up in solitude. As a wife is to an impotent man, or a beautiful sight to a blind man, so is this worship to you who are not even a king." Right, so, you know, his whole point is this, he's beyond that. So none of these things matter to Krishna, right? Shishupal strode towards the gate of the arena, followed by several other kings who were in agreement, right? So he has his little group. Right? Jarasandha's there, he has his people. Shishupal's there, he has his people. So these people are inimical. But because it was Yudhishthira, then, Krishna's not technically involved. So then, you know, they think it's all right. But now that they see Krishna's involved, then now they're inimical. Other kings rose in anger upon hearing Shishupal's words. Some of them left the assembly, censuring the Chedi king, while others took up their swords and shields in order to fight with him. Because he said this, so now the assembly, he has his few people, but everybody else is getting very upset. Bhishma at once strode up and justified the selection of Krishna. He spoke fearlessly, checking Shishupal as he walked away. "He who does not approve of the worship of Krishna, who is the oldest person in the universe," right, because he said he's not the oldest, "deserves no respect at all. King of Chedi, we do not worship Krishna out of material motivations, like as he would. Many times I have heard from those advanced in knowledge that Krishna is the supreme person in whom the universe itself is established. Foolish men like you can never understand this." That's the thing, is that from mundane consciousness you can't understand transcendence. It's not a matter of logic. Transcendence is logical, but it's not by logic that you can understand it. That's the key point that just is not caught by those who are atheistic. They think that, no, I'm intelligent, I should be able to understand by my intelligence. But no, it's by faith that you understand. If you have faith, then you apply your intelligence, you'll see it works. If you don't have faith, you apply the intelligence, it won't work, because you use mundane intelligence. Bhishma gave numerous reasons why Krishna should be worshipped. He described the many wonderful feats Krishna had achieved. Even as a child, he had slain the many powerful demons Kamsa had sent to kill him. In the end, he had even killed Kamsa himself. Once Krishna had lifted a great hill with one hand and held it for a full week. Bhishma challenged any king to match Krishna's prowess in battle, or any wealthy man to display more riches, right? Because he said, neither the eldest, the wisest, nor more powerful. So Bhishma is showing, he's all these things, and I even dare anyone here to match it. No one should show more knowledge or wisdom than Krishna. In every way, Krishna was possessed of superlative opulence. Right, because we see is that even at this point, Bhagavad Gita hasn't been spoken to Arjuna. But the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita that Krishna spoke to the sun god is still being quoted. And that's millions of years ago. Right? So, good knowledge, serious. When Bhishma stopped speaking, Sahadeva rose and lifted his left foot. Right? Not even his right foot, no, the left foot. He was angry and his voice boomed. "If there is any man here who feels Krishna should not be worshipped, then let him step forward. I shall place my left foot on his head. Who will give me a reply?" Right? Who says he shouldn't? Step forward. I'll put my left foot on your head. As Sahadev spoke, the sky reverberated with voices crying, "Excellent, well spoken," as showers of flowers fell on his head. Because, right? You know, it's that conviction is there. It's just, this is correct and this is the way it is, and he's defending. Narad then spoke, "Those men who will not worship Krishna should be considered dead, even though breathing. They should not even be gazed upon," right? So they're already, you shouldn't even look at them. You'll become contaminated. So with all this, then Shishubal became even angrier. He turned towards his supporters and shouted, "Here I am, ready to lead you. What needs to be considered? Let us stand in battle against the Yadus and the Pandavas," right? So you understand that they're completely insane, because when you have lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, then madness. You just don't see things as they are. Your false ego becomes so big that you think that you're so impervious to anything. So that's the thing. So pride and this madness are in the same category. So when the pride goes to extreme, it's called madness. Many kings have been agitated by Shishupal's speech. They now gathered around the Chedi king. Weapons clashed as they were drawn, and armor clanked as the monarchs threw it on. Shishupal continued to stir his supporters. "Let us act quickly so that the sacrifice may not be concluded successfully." Now, he just wants to ruin the sacrifice. He said he doesn't agree in this. No, they have to ruin it. This is also another asset of the demoniac mentality. Is if they don't like it, it can't happen. Rather than, I don't like it, I don't get involved. They want to do what they do, they do. I do what I do. No, I do what I do. No one else should do what they want to do. So you see a standard path. Things we could say is, oh, these are cliched, but this is the way the modes of nature work. Everyone should know that we did not agree to Krishna being worshipped, right? So then they can feel, yeah, no, I said, like this. Yudhishthira's supporters also prepared themselves for battle. The great assembly looked like an ocean rising at the full moon. Yudhishthira was alarmed to see a sacrifice about to be spoiled, even as it had almost reached its conclusion. He turned anxiously to Bhishma and said, "Grandsire, these kings are seized by wrath and seem bent upon battle. What should I do to avoid my sacrifice being spoiled and my subjects harmed?" Right, so he asked, that means the sacrifice is auspicious, it should go on. You know, how can the citizens not get, disturbed and all that? And at the same time, is, you know, the conclusion of it is, the reason he wants it is because Krishna is established as the Supreme Person. Bhishma laughed and replied in a voice that Shishupal could hear clearly, "O best of Kurus, have no fear that Shishupal can create any disturbance in Krishna's presence. He and his supporters are like a pack of dogs barking at a sleeping lion. Only as long as Madhava does not act can they exhibit their valor. He is the creator and destroyer of all beings in the universe. Shishupal has very little intelligence," right? Because the Vedic intelligence is gained by how much you can apply it into that spiritual understanding. Because here we're talking about, is Krishna supreme or not? So if you can't understand that, that's called little intelligence. You may have intelligence on how to run his kingdom or make money or other things like that, but that's not considered the purpose or what the ultimate application of human intelligence is for. Human intelligence is meant to realize God. So if you can't apply it there, it means he's less intelligent, even though materially he might be good in so many things. Shishupal has very little intelligence. He will surely take all these kings with him to death's abode, right? All the ones that agree with him. It seems that Krishna now desires to take back to himself the power he gave Shishupal. That is why the Chedi king's intelligence has become so perverse, right? Because otherwise he wouldn't be so foolish. I mean, he has everybody here, and the demigods are agreeing. All the people he said are worthy of worship. They're agreeing with Krishna being worshipped. He's not seeing this. Shishupal could not tolerate Bhishma's words, right? Bhishma said this loud enough so he could hear it. And he screamed in response, "Most infamous wretch of your race, are you not afraid to speak such words in front of all these kings? With you as their leader, the Kurus are like blind men being led by another blind man. You have simply given us pain by describing the deeds of the powerless cowherd Krishna. Right? He wants to say it like that because he got defeated by Krishna. So the only way he can find solace is to say, well, he's a cowherd boy. You know, so he finds fault in Krishna. But the point is, if he was a cowherd boy and not a king, and he came in amongst all those kings and walked off with Rukmini, and there was a fight, and he defeated them all, you know, with Rukmini driving the chariot, right? And so then doesn't that make his position even lower? Right? Now, so if he's a great king, got defeated, okay, what can you do? He's a great king. Or if he's an equal, okay, was equally met. Or a junior king, well, that looks bad. That in Shishupal, he's not even a king, he's a coward man. So a coward boy came and defeated him. So he doesn't even understand. He's even insulting himself. Arrogant and foolish as you are, it is a wonder that your tongue does not split into 100 parts. Shishupal railed on, insulting both Bhishma and Krishna. In his opinion, the so-called wonderful deeds Bhishma had described were nothing. Anyone else could have done them, right? You know, lift a mountain for 7 days, yeah. What was so amazing about lifting a small hill for a few days, right? Small hill. The Govardhan Hill, at that time, it was 2 miles high. So it means 3 kilometers high. No, not small. Or killing a few inferior demons. You wretch, although you pose as virtuous and learned, we can see your real nature. You are sinful and ignorant. Right? So he's just saying his own qualities. Right? Because what qualities you have, that's what you see. Only because you are impotent have you taken your famous vow of celibacy, right? So you say, you've taken this vow of celibacy because you can't have children anyway. So therefore, there's no real meaning to your vow. It's not like you took the vow and you could, but no, you took the vow, you were impotent. So then, you know, everybody thinks, oh, so important. So he's trying to find fault. You deserve to die at the hands of these kings. Hearing his noble grandfather insulted so grievously, Bhima became enraged. His large eyes, resembling lotus petals, expanded even further in anger, and they turned coppery red. His brow wrinkled into 3 lines, and he ground his teeth. He stood up, appearing like death, prepared to swallow every creature at the end of the yuga. But Bhishma caught him by the hand and restrained him. He appeased Bhima with gentle words. Like the ocean, unable to transgress its shores, Bhima felt unable to disobey the Kuru elder. He sat down again, glaring at Shishupal. So this is the fun part that's never brought up or discussed, because it's not an issue, is that Bhima is as strong as 10,000 elephants. Bhima, right? Bhishma just catches his hand and he can't move. One, you have the aspect of that because he's the senior, he's his grandfather, he's telling him to be quiet. So therefore, out of respect, he has. But at the same time, is Bhishma's strength is it's not calculated. You know, 10,000 is for really exceptional people. At this time in the Mahabharata, only 5 people had that strength. But Bhishma is in another category, like that. Shishupal laughed. Release him, Bhishma. Let all these kings see him burnt down by my prowess, as an insect is destroyed by fire. Bhima again started up, but Bhishma stopped him with a glance, fixing Shishupal with his angry eyes. He then began to narrate the Chedi monarch's history. Shishupal had been born with 3 eyes, 4 arms, and 4 arms. As soon as he took birth, he screamed and brayed like an ass, right? Similar like Duryodhana. An invisible voice from the heavens prophesied that he would grow up powerful and fearless, but that one day a great hero would kill him. When Shishupal's mother asked the voice who that hero would be, it replied that the child's extra arms and 3rd eye would disappear when he was placed upon the lap of the person who would one day kill him. Right? So you have the aspect that he has 3 eyes and 4 arms. Whoever's lap he's placed upon, he'll go back and he'll look normal, right? He'll have 2 eyes and 2 arms. But that will be the person who will kill him in the future. This came to pass when young Shishupal was placed upon Krishna's lap, right? Because he's his cousin. Horrified when she realized that Krishna would kill her son, Shishupal's mother had begged, "Please grant me a boon, Krishna. Pardon my son for any offense he may give you. I desire his welfare and long life." Krishna replied, "Blessed lady, even when Shishupal deserves to be killed, I will forgive him. Indeed, I shall tolerate 100 offenses from him." Right? Because, you know, she was in anxiety and he wants to make her peaceful. Bhishma concluded, "This wretch is thus destined to be killed by Krishna. His time has come. Therefore he roars like this, caring nothing for the infallible and unknowable Krishna or us. A man on the verge of death loses his senses and will say anything." That's why it also says at the time of death, if someone's, you know, like deranged and all that, then what they're saying, you know, can't be taken as seriously. You have to take what they were saying before when they were saying. Like, let's say the gentleman writes a will, but at the time of death, right, you know, before he dies, he says something completely different and all that. You can't take that as seriously as the will, like that. You know, devotees, they have a clear consciousness in that, but you see, for the materialists, they get completely bewildered. Shishupal again attacked Bhishma, delivering another harsh speech. Bhishma waited for him to finish and replied calmly, "O king, cease your ranting." Right, see here, he's speaking, and then Bhishma waits for him to finish, then he says something. Right? So the difficulty comes up is then you know, Shishupal can't do that. "There will never be an end to arguments. O king, cease your ranting, for there will never be an end to arguments, for words may always be answered with words," right? So whatever logic you can use another logic to say it the other way. And that way you can just go on forever. "Here is Govinda. Let anyone opposes him stand now before him in battle. Thus you will attain liberation, your soul entering his transcendental body," right? So he's pointing out that, you know, you want to fight with him, you fight with him. Then you'll, you know, you'll be liberated. Shishupal roared like an enraged lion. Then Krishna spoke, that so that everyone could hear, "This cruel-hearted man is my aunt's son. Yet he is always wishes me and my relatives ill." Right? So even though he's a cousin. "Once when I was away from Dwarka, he came and set fire to my city. He killed many citizens and took away many more in chains. This wretch even stole saintly Akrura's wife. On another occasion, cunningly disguising himself, he ravished the princess of Vishala, who was the intended bride of the Kurusha king. Obviously desiring a speedy death, he even tried to possess the chaste Rukmini. I have tolerated these and numerous other insults at his hands, only because I made a promise to my aunt. But I promised to bear only 100 insults. That number has now become full," right? So there's been all these insults all this time, and so all 100, but now it's crossed the mark of 100. "I shall therefore slay Shishupal now in your presence." Having heard Krishna's words, the kings reproached Shishupal, but he merely laughed and said, "Krishna, how do you speak of Rukmini, who was intended for me, but whom you stole by slyness and deceit?" Right, it was right in front of them. Right, Rakshasa marriage is a standard thing amongst kings to show their prowess, and it's not like he just, when known, was actually, you know, aware. I mean, they weren't aware. It means they weren't there. They were right there on the elephants with all them, and horses with all their. "You cannot call yourself a man. Do whatever you will, whether you are angry or friendly. What harm can you do to me?" Right? Because he's thinking he's so much greater, Shishupal. As Shishupal spoke, Krishna thought of his discus weapon, the Sudarshan Chakra. It immediately appeared in his hand, and Krishna raised it above his head. Releasing the chakra, he said, "I have kept my promise to my aunt. Shishupal's offenses have now exceeded the number specified, and now I will kill him." The chakra left Krishna's hand and streaked towards Shishupal, even as he continued his tirade. So Shishupal is still ranting and raving and saying all kinds of insults to Krishna. The king tried desperately to draw his sword to fend off the chakra, but the powerful disc weapon was too swift. It caught him on the neck and immediately severed his head from his body. The mighty king fell like a cliff struck by a thunderbolt, because they're big kshatriyas, they're very powerful. As he dropped to the ground, a brilliant light was seen to leave his body and enter into Krishna. Right, so as he's cutting out, the head is still talking and making insults, right, you know. A brilliant light was seen to leave his body and enter into Krishna, right, because that was the soul. Rain fell from a cloudless, thunderless, thundering sky, and the earth trembled. No one spoke, Shishupal's supporters were angry, but dared say nothing, unless they want to be next. The rishis, however, were pleased by Krishna's act and praised him for it. Gradually, the assembly became peaceful again. Yudhishthira ordered his brothers to perform Shishupal's funeral ceremony without delay. He then installed Shishupal's son as king of Chedi. And the last ceremonies were performed to complete the Rajasui. So they performed his death rites, they installed his son as that, and after doing all that, then they continued with the Rajasuya. Along with Draupadi, Yudhishthira took the final ritualistic bath in the sacred Yamuna, and the sacrifice was over. Right? Because the final ritualistic, with all your clothes on and everything that you're wearing, you go into the river, take a ritualistic bath and come out, and then all those ornaments and that are given to all the assistants that are there, and they put on fresh clothes and then like this. After some days, the kings departed for their own kingdoms. The Pandavas accompanied them to the outskirts of Indraprastha, then bid them farewell. Yudhishthira begged Krishna to stay longer, however, and he consented, although he sent his party back to Dwarka, while he and his queens remained behind. So previously, he hadn't come with the queens, his party went back, and he stayed alone, and then he and Arjuna, spent some time in the Kandava forest, burning and all that happened. And so this time he came with with all his wives and relatives and everything. Everyone else went back, but Krishna stayed with all his wives. During his stay in Indraprastha, Draupadi personally served Krishna, and he developed much affection for the Pandava queen. One day, when she had served him some fruits, he began paring them with a knife. Suddenly, the knife slipped, and he nicked his finger. Blood flowed from the cut, and seeing this, Draupadi immediately tore a piece from her fine sari and handed it to him to bandage his finger. Taking the cloth, Krishna smiled and said, "O gentle lady, I will surely repay this gift of your sari," right? Because she gave him a little piece of cloth. Draupadi looked down modestly and thanked Krishna, who wrapped his finger with a strip of silk. He then stood up and left the room. Okay, so that ends that aspect of the Rajasuya. Next we'll see Duryodhana's envy, at seeing, because they stay, and then seeing the sabha and everything and his wealth and everything. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.